a very, very warm welcome on this rather cold day. It's lovely to see so many of you here. January is for us a very special month. It was the month in which the founder of our organization passed on, and so it's a month when we give special attention to having extra meditation. And actually, the third Sunday of every month is a practice, it's our practice to meditate, especially to send peaceful thoughts to the world. And so we'd like you, we're really happy that you're here with us today, and at the end of our program we will have some special time for meditation so that perhaps we can practice some of the things that Sister Genty and Philippa Black and Leah are going to talk about in their interview. Does it sound okay? Good. So today, the topic today, developing a still mind. Now, what is a still mind? Is it an empty mind? Is it a passive mind? Is it a fixed mind? Or is it when I'm feeling content, clear-headed, confident, so that I'm ready to help other people and interact with them in a way that's cooperative and loving? Sounds nice, no? So how do we achieve that awareness, that sense of confidence and contentment and clarity? And this is something that our speakers are going to address in the interview. And perhaps I can now introduce our speakers. Sister Genty, I think many of you know. Is there anyone who's meeting Sister Genty for the first time? A few, that's great. A special welcome to you. Sister Genty is the European Director of the Brahmakumaris, and she's also their UN representative at Geneva. At the age of 19, she decided to dedicate her life to spiritual practice, spiritual study, and spiritual service. And she spends a lot of her time now, as well as looking after Europe, as well as these UN activities, she spends a lot of her time traveling around the world, helping people to get in touch again with their own spirituality and their own core values. And so I think she's a perfect person to ask these questions. How do I, each one of us, how do we develop that still mind? And Philippa Blackham is a radio journalist, and she also has been practicing Raja Yoga meditation for a long time. She was just 18 when she started, and Raja Yoga has always been and is now especially a very important part of Philippa's life. And so I know this conversation is going to be very lively, very interesting, and very deep. So the way we're going to run today is that we will start with our interview, and then at 7 o'clock we invite you to join us in a half an hour's meditation. And for those of you who perhaps aren't so familiar with the meditation that we practice, there will be a couple of meditation commentaries just to help guide your thoughts. And I want to thank that person whose phone went off, because that's a wonderful reminder, thank you, for my next announcement, which is please do just check your phones. And sometimes we think we've turned them off and we haven't. So please onto silence, or better still, off. That will be great. So I'd now like to hand over to Philippa and to Sister Genty to take us into the secrets of what it means to develop a still mind. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rachel. And yes, a very good evening from me as well. It feels a real honour to be here today. It's my first time at Harmony House, so it feels a real treat, and it's just a joy to see such a beautiful bouquet of shining faces here this evening. And I think we're in for a real treat, and I for one am really keen to get stuck into this subject of developing a still mind. I noticed from my Facebook news feed at the end of the year that the most popular app of 2017 was an app called Calm. I don't know if you know of this. It's basically, when you download it, it gives you 15 seconds of not very much happening at all, actually. It's just long grasses blowing in the wind for 15 seconds, or apple blossom falling from a tree for 15 seconds, or raindrops coming down a window pane for 15 seconds. But I thought it was interesting in that it tells us quite a lot about the need that is out there in the world at this time for calm and for a still mind. And if you think about it, a still mind is one of those things that actually money can't buy. You know, we are very good at getting what we want from our lives, how to achieve success in every aspect of our lives, and we can have everything. But if we don't have a still mind, we are really left feeling lacking, that there is something missing. And Sister Gentry, as you can see from her presence, has cultivated this still mind. And it would be lovely to have some of those secrets of her many years' experience in this. And am I right, Sister Gentry, in saying that a still mind, yes, we can watch something for 15 seconds, or we can go into the forest and feel peaceful for half an hour, but if we truly want to have a still mind in our lives, this is something that we have to create an intention around and actually do something to cultivate that. It's not just going to happen by itself.
What happens automatically by itself is that the mind goes all over the place. That's what's become natural. But in fact, what we're trying to do is to come back to a very special consciousness, and I've got stuck into the subject without even saying Om Shanti to all of you. And so Om Shanti is I am peace. As I come to the awareness of the inner being, who am I? And I cultivate that peace within the self and connect with the being that I am truly inside. Then in that awareness, I begin to have a glimpse of what is peace, what is stillness. And because it's become such a different situation generally, I really have to practice it and come back to that state. Then it begins to feel more and more natural, more and more comfortable. And I realize that the noise and the frenetic state of mind was actually not natural. But you know how when the body is in overdrive, you get used to it, and then you forget that there's another state, which is a relaxed state. And so relaxation seems different and odd. But then you begin to realize that that state is actually natural. It's a little bit the same thing with the mind, that we've forgotten that the natural state of the mind is calm and stillness. And so once you understand the mechanics of what's going on in the mind and how to be able to allow it to come back to Om Shanti, then it comes to that natural awareness of peace.
We seem to have a full understanding of developing the faculty of the intellect. You know, we have education, we learn things, we understand that if we work on our intellect, it will absorb more information and be sharper. But there seems to be this notion that a mind is just something that we're born with, and our mind is just our mind. We can't actually change that or do anything with that. Mm-hmm. But what you're saying is actually the mind is, it's almost like a muscle that if we exercise it, it will perform in a way that we want it to.
Absolutely. We haven't had that understanding that there's a being that I am, which is the master of the mind, and it's actually the creator of thoughts. We tend to think that thoughts are coming to us from out there. I see something, I hear something, and I react, and I think, well, that's how life is. But in fact, as you become more and more aware of your spiritual identity as a soul, then in that awareness of the soul, then you realize that it's me, it's I, that's actually creating thoughts. And so I can choose to create many thoughts, or I can choose to create a few thoughts that allow those thoughts to lead me into an experience. And so what Raja Yoga meditation is teaching me is that as the creator of what's going on in my own mind, I can choose which way to go. Yes, I can use my mind to explore explore ideas, to go into the depth of understanding something, that I can also use my mind to go deeper inside myself and to get to know who I am truly in a very profound way. And when I do this, then I learn how to be able to create the right thoughts.
You mentioned the Raja Yoga meditation, which is the subject that is taught and practiced at the Brahma Kumaris. And I'd like to just clarify a little bit what we mean by a still mind, because in some traditions there is a goal of trying to go beyond the mind, trying to reach a state of no mind, in a way trying to kill off the mind, or reach a place where there are no thoughts. But in Raja Yoga, this is very much not the intention, this is not the thought of what we're trying to do.
It's a journey. And at the point where I am now, just in the identity of the physical, my thoughts are stimulated by what's going on out here, and I'm just reacting to the things outside. I'm not actually taking charge of what's going on inside me. And so first step, understanding I'm a soul, understanding that I can choose the quality of thoughts I'd like to have. And when I practice the meditation later with guided commentaries, you'll see how when I go inwards, then I come to that awareness of seeing my thoughts, and I don't want negative thoughts, I don't want wasteful thoughts, I don't want ordinary thoughts. I want to have pure thoughts related to the original being that I am, and also related to God. The word yoga, union, is the connection of the self, Raja, the highest, the supreme, the connection with the divine. And so the second subject that I'm using my mind in a very conscious way to explore is the subject of God. Who, where, how, all these are the ideas that we study in Raja Yoga teachings. And as I explore these ideas, my mind is gradually becoming calmer, quieter, and is moving in the direction in which I connect with my mind to God. There's an expression that comes in the Gita which says, Man Manabhav, turn your mind towards me. And there's also an expression that's related to the intellect, but I think the way in which the Western world uses the word intellect and the way it's used in meditation is a bit different. So mind is that a capacity to create thoughts and to have feelings and emotions. Then I have my buddhi. I think the majority here understand buddhi, intellect. It's the closest translation, but not quite the intellect that was talked about earlier. But that capacity that I, the soul, have to understand something, to reason, and then further, to be able to discern right and wrong, my conscience. So all of that is the buddhi. And the Gita has this expression, buddhi yoga. Link the yoga of your intellect with me. And so the mind is now being gradually led in that direction by making contact with God. And the buddhi, it comes to the point where with that understanding, I'm now connecting, and in that connection, I'm receiving that love, that peace, that joy, and the mind is automatically becoming very, very quiet. And when I'm actually in the experience of that relationship and connection with the divine, there are actually no conscious thoughts at that time. I didn't start by saying, the mind is bad, I don't want any thoughts. I start by channeling its energy in a specific way, and then the mind becomes quiet and the experience takes over. You know, when you're having a powerful experience, you're not analyzing it. You're not saying that it is this, it is that or the other, but you're lost in that experience. And so in that stage where the buddhi is deeply connected with the divine, the mind is very quiet and the awareness and the experience is primary. And so the soul is experiencing that and filling itself with that. And later when I come out of the meditation, then I would say, that was a beautiful experience of God's love. Or it was a beautiful experience of absolute peace. So the labeling comes later. And you don't start with that intention of doing anything, in a sense that I'm trying to still my mind or conquer my mind. It's not like that. I want to use my mind to connect me with God. So there's a big difference.
And I suppose as well, if you're wanting to cultivate a still mind, you need to give the mind something still to focus on, because that will induce the sense of stillness. And as all of you who've been in this house, I'm sure you will have seen somewhere this point of light with the rays. There's one up there with the rays of light that come out of it. And there's this idea of God being a still point that I can focus my mind on, which then instills stillness in me.
Absolutely. If I'm looking at something that's whizzing and flashing, it's very stimulating, and my senses are going to pull me in that direction and my mind is going to be racing. But and of course this is just an external symbol of the actual being, who is the being, God, the divine, the being of light, the source of all attributes, of all positive qualities. So that focusing my eyes on this is useful. And what I'm doing with that is another aspect of training, and that is, most people would associate meditation, close your eyes. As soon as you say meditation, the immediate response of people is, okay, let's sit quietly and let's close our eyes. But what we're suggesting in Raj Yoga is that it's actually a question of inner consciousness rather than what's going on with my eyes. So it means that even as I'm walking and talking, I can keep that higher awareness, consciousness, connecting to the divine. And so it's a very useful purpose, keeping this image here, even though my yoga is not with the image, but it becomes a focus for my eyes so that I can keep my eyes relaxed but open, but also practice this detachment between what the eyes are seeing and what my intellect is doing. And so yes, my eyes will then focus on something still, that's beneficial, but my mind is focusing on God.
I like that aspect, in that it makes it something very practical that we can carry through in our everyday lives. And that leads me on to thinking of a question that may be in the minds of some of you right now, which would be that, you know, it's fine for Sister Jenti to sit here and talk about a still mind because she's living in a meditation center, and, you know, what is there to get upset about, quite frankly? So peace and calm and love and light. And, you know, for me in my life, I'm only going to get a still mind when, you know, my husband learns to stop nagging me, or the builders finish the extension and take all their mess away, or the children have grown up and left home, or whatever excuse we want to give for ourselves. But I know Sister Jenti well enough to say that, yes, she is one of the stillest minds that I know, but she's also one of the busiest people that I know. So I'm intrigued by this aspect. Is it possible to have a busy intellect at the same time as having a still mind? Can you do that?
I think it's not so much as the question of a busy intellect, but allowing the intellect to prioritize. And so if my priority is first and foremost my own inner spiritual development, then I'm making time, and for me it's, and I think for most of us, making time first thing in the morning, time for silence, time to nurture the intellect with God's love and that goodness that one is able to draw, that purity and power. And that then carries me through the busy day. And in situations where maybe some years ago I would have reacted, now I'll say, Om Shanti. And I don't say it externally, but I say it internally. But it's a reminder, okay, it's fine, it's okay. And so, yes, it's a busy life and a lot of activity, but the intellect is recharged. It's recharged every single morning. Mm. And so the recharging of the inner battery means that things can go in the way they should.
And in reality, do you find that you can maintain that stillness no matter the frenzy that is going on around you?
I found that the more I use this formula to stay inside and really be what I would describe as soul conscious, aware of the soul, the easier it is to deal with whatever is going on outside. I've discovered that if there's somebody who's angry and I let myself get upset or get angry, then it's just endless. It's never going to stop. And it's not just that that person will get more angry as time goes on. And that also, of course, happens. But even after the incident, my mind will be just repeating that over and over again, because it's laid such a deep and heavy imprint on the soul. And if, contrary to that, whatever is going on, I remind myself and I go inside and I stay still, then the incident takes on less of a pressure and probably the heat is reduced and the situation reverts to normal far more quickly and the body feels different. When you allow anger to come as a reaction to whatever, for the physiology of the body to come back to a state of equanimity, it takes time. And you can feel your pulse racing, your heart racing, your adrenaline flying, and it's definitely not good for body or mind. The mind is also just remembering, 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 but a different response, and you learn this. Maybe there are some people who are naturally calm, and I know that before I came to live in a center, they would have said probably I was quiet rather than calm. Mm. But I was very shy. That was one factor. But also, I didn't react to people. But it wasn't an external reaction, but there was an inner reaction. And then when I came to live in the center, then it was a different situation. And I found myself reacting externally also. And I realized that I have to go deeper inside myself to be able to clean out whatever was the negativity within. And then I'd be able to truly be calm and quiet. And so, yes, you discover many things about yourself that you didn't know.
It does feel a little that the world is on a kind of a mental roller coaster at the moment with the amount of mental distraction available to us. You know, we all now carry our devices and we're kind of addicted to checking them. And, you know, I know from, you know, my contact with young people, they can multitask in a way that you wouldn't believe. So like when I was a child, you know, we would watch the television, we would just sit and watch the television. Today's youngsters, yes, they might watch a film or watch a television, but at the same time they're having a conversation on, you know, Instagram or Snapchat whilst watching a film, whilst engaging with the people in the room, whilst eating popcorn. You know, it's like their need to have the mind so engaged is like a hungry beast that is getting more and more out of control. And I wonder if you have noticed a difference in the 50 odd years that you've been trying to train minds to stillness, that actually it's getting harder for people because of this addiction to busyness and addiction to distraction.
You know, there's another very interesting ingredient I discovered many years ago, maybe 10, 15 years ago now, and it was that, yes, all the things you said are correct, the stimulation and all this distraction, but the other thing is that the chemicals that there are in the foods that we eat, the water that we drink, the air that we breathe, all of these chemicals are having an impact on the neurology of the human being. And so we're less able to concentrate, our immune system is lower, and our tolerance capacity has decreased. Now, this is research by the World Wildlife Fund, because they were saying, as I say, many years ago, that all these chemicals are doing so much damage, not only to human life, but to all species. And you find probably, at that time they said, you'd find a minimum of 550 extra chemicals in every organism under the sun from the North Pole down.
Wow.
And so it's worth you chasing it up and finding out more, but there's probably more chemicals now, but that is the state of the world. And so all of these things are going on, and so yes, it is more difficult. But on the other side, this is why people are turning more and more to meditation, mindfulness, various methods to be able to develop the self. It's like when you get pushed against a wall, you have to find a way out. You can't let yourself be pinned against that wall. And so it's like all of these things have reached an extreme state. And so as a result of that now, we're wanting to explore how can I tune my mind to a different level, how can I focus my memory, concentrate better. All of these things are now very much people exploring them and thinking about them.
If you think about the number of images that we're exposed to now, surrounded by different images, and I know from my own practice of trying to observe the way the mind works, there is definitely a relationship between things that I've seen during the day, things that I've heard during the day, things that I've put into my mouth and eaten or tasted during the day or smelt. It's like the mind is like a sponge for all these influences. So in order to have a still mind, would you say we need to have real alertness to what influences we are exposing our mind to?
Absolutely. I'm sure you know this, but one of the things I read last week was that the epidemic that people are talking about now is insomnia. And I won't ask you the question, but I'm sure many, many people here would say that they have difficulty falling asleep.
Yeah.
And it's precisely because of this, all the things they're watching and listening and experimenting with all our senses, to allow all of that to become quiet and calm takes time. And so they're tossing and turning. And especially, of course, if you keep your mobile phone on through the night and you keep it near you, it's actually not going to let you sleep at all. And so there's a direct connection of all these things. What Raja Yoga is saying is that there are two separate things. And the word Raja, earlier I mentioned that connection, yoga, with the highest, but we also use the word Raja in another context. That yoga, which teaches me to be the master of the self, Raja, the sovereign of the self. And that's telling me that practicing a certain type of yoga, meditation, is going to give me mastery, firstly over my physical senses, and secondly, mastery over my own mind and my inner faculties. And so there are two things, soul and body. And sometimes we say, this is the human and this is the being. And we know a lot about the human, but we don't know about controlling the human. But when we discover and experiment with ideas related to the inner being, then the awareness of the inner being becomes so powerful that now when I look, what am I seeing? I'm not just seeing the colors and the faces and the clothes and the hairstyles. I'm seeing the shining stars just here in the center of the forehead. And so I'm being very selective about how I use these eyes, taking charge, taking control. What am I hearing? I hear my name being called and I instantly turn. And maybe it's not for me, it could be somebody else, but I'm tuned to my name and so my attention gets distracted. And maybe I'm hearing things I shouldn't be hearing, but it's going to then prey on my mind, and my mind is going to be buzzing with that word or that idea that I heard. And so our senses are constantly pulling the mind. And in meditation, what I'm doing is coming back here to the awareness of the soul, allowing the senses to become calm, the body to become still, so that it's not a distraction. And then I'm beginning the inner journey of allowing the mind to become quiet, because the intellect, the buddhi, now knows I, the soul, am in charge of my thoughts. And so we're doing two things, becoming the masters of the senses, but also the masters of the inner faculties. So yes, it's a very big difference between the external world of stimulation and zero peace and zero control of the mind, and the state where you're practicing these ideas and as a result your own experience is validating the things that you've been hearing about, and through your own experience and meditation you know how to move the mind in a specific way.
I love the idea of that, because in a way it's like a true mental health service. You know, it's how to keep the mind healthy, whereas actually what society out there means by mental health services is how to deal with the mind once it's tipped over into a place of disease, how to deal with anxiety, depression, or you know, schizophrenia, or whatever the mental a health issue is. But this is kind of preventative in a way, and with the pressures out there, I'm imagining as time goes on, you know, this hall is going to start feeling a bit small with the number of people who are just desperate to learn how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to ask you about a person who's very special to many of us here, Dadi Janki, who is the head of the Brahma Kumaris. She was once part of an experiment in which she was wired up in a laboratory, and they tested the functioning of her mind to see how stable it was and to see what change there was in her mind while she was meditating. And they were truly amazed by the results that they came up with from studying her, and declared her to be the most stable mind that they had ever tested. And Sister Jenti, you've been very fortunate in spending, you know, a large part of your last 50 years living and working very closely with Dadi Janki. She's now 102, and her mind appears to be as healthy today as it ever has been. What have you learned from your close relationship with that incredible mind?
Dadi has always cultivated purity in her intentions, in her thoughts and her feelings, so that for example when she sees somebody, she always sees the good in them. And sometimes I used to say to her, but Dadi, this person is so difficult, this and this and this, and she'd say, well, try seeing the other side. And she'd tell me, what about this and this? So I've seen that this is something that she's been doing. Well, I was 8 when I first met her. That was 60 years ago. And I didn't have that close connection, but close enough because it was a very small group of people who were the Brahma Kumaris at the time.
And she made an impact on you.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then she continued the connection. We migrated to London soon after my mother started to practice meditation, and we would get a letter from her, from Daddy, regularly. And she would be not just writing news and things, but she would be writing about spiritual things and sharing her own insights and practices and so on. So that pure sustenance has supported me through the whole of my life. And yes, I've seen that she keeps the mind very clean, very pure. You were talking about influences earlier, and the influence of people is actually very insidious. One is the influence of media and all of that, but the influence of people. And so, you know, you've spent 15 minutes, 20 minutes with somebody, and those ideas have been absorbed. And so you start thinking along different lines, or they've planted different seeds and now those things are going on. Well, Daddy allows really only God's influence to work on her. And so she's made sure that she sees the positive, but secondly, she makes sure that she has spiritual study every day. How many people do you know who are 102? Not so many. And out of that, how many people over 100 still study? But Daddy devotes time for spiritual study till now, which is why she's constantly full of so many beautiful inspirations that she shares all the time with everyone. Morning, evening, morning, evening. And so, if I keep my mind engaged in spiritual study, it also means that the grey cells, the grey matter, is kept young and active. And so these two things are very, very much there in her life. Thirdly, she's always enthusiastic about life, always passionate. I don't remember seeing Daddy, doesn't matter, you know. She's not going to sit back in a rocking chair even at this point, and so she's absolutely engaged. One of my colleagues, Maureen, was travelling early this morning to Stockton, and she told me, she asked me, do you have Daddy's thoughts on such and such a topic? I said, no, I haven't talked to Daddy about this. And so she telephoned India from the car. Technology can do wonderful things. So she telephoned India, and Daddy sent her a recorded message within minutes, so that then there would be a message for the place that Maureen was going to. And I heard that message, and a very beautiful message, and she was absolutely in tune. And so I think lessons to be learned: cultivate a positive mind, develop a relationship with the divine so that that influence works on you and it protects you from any other negative or mundane influence. Study, spiritual study, so that the brain cells stay active, and love life. And so these four ingredients will definitely keep your mind very healthy and strong.
And no notion of retiring, because why would you want to retire from something which is your passion?
Well, she says, I'm not tired, so why should I retire?
When we talk about this process of cultivating a still mind, of course there is benefit for oneself, but that's not the only reason to do this, because we know that the way our mind functions and sees things is having a direct impact on the world around us. And I noticed, Ajanti, that you've been an active part of all the climate change conferences that have been happening all around the world for many years. Were you there at Rio at the very beginning?
I was involved in the creation of the Earth Charter.
Which was around that same time. Mm. And one of the key messages that you've been slowly championing, and it's now really taking hold, is the way in which the world as we see it out there and all the problems that we can identify, with climate being a key one, in many ways are a reflection of our own mind, and that it's our own mind where we need to focus our attention if we want to change what is out there.
And we've been trying to change things out there, and I don't think we've made a very good job of it. Things have gone from bad to worse, I think. Things are more chaotic than when I was a child. Things are darker, I'll just say that. And so now I think there's a different approach, a different perspective. And I'd use the term inside out. Mm-hmm. And so if we look inside, then we see that the ego, the anger, the greed, it's all of this that's actually creating the problems that are going on outside. And so can I change things inside? And I can with meditation. It's beautiful for me to see how the new areas of development in neurology and medical science and things like this are letting us know that change is possible. They used to say that the circuitry of the brain after the age of 7 or 8 is more or less fixed. And now there's a whole world that's opened up, and we know that there's a plasticity that's there. And so you can actually change the pathways that are going on in the brain. And so where before we thought that you couldn't deal with anger, you couldn't deal with greed, it was absolutely wired into the brain, and this is how human beings are. Well, now we know that that's not true. And so if I, the soul, connect with the divine and come back to my original state of peace, of love, of joy, of truth, and by consciously practicing these ideas, I now use peace, truth in my action and interaction. I'm changing things out there, but I'm also changing the circuitry. And this change is going to support me in transforming myself and my responses to the world. There's a beautiful concept I came across a couple of months ago. David Hamilton, a person who's been doing research into the subject of kindness and compassion, was with us, and he shared, he's been researching this for about 15 years now, and he shared this experiment that's happened in Harvard, and just keeping an eye on the clock so that we have our time for meditation, but
we're still fine for 5 minutes.
But it's a very interesting story of hope, and hope for the world. Harvard University was having games, experiments in which they were seeing the response of people. And in one particular game where they had high-level individuals, they put into groups at different tables, they were given a certain amount of money and told to build a city. And everybody at each table had their own pot, and they were told, there's also a pot for common good, and you can contribute what you want out of your budget to that. And people were putting in a certain amount, generally more or less the same. They tried an experiment, and they had an actor planted, and he was told he had to put in double the amount. So he put in double the amount into the pot of common good. There were 5 other people with him. They all noticed what he did, and they then moved on to other tables, and those 5 other people did the same thing, doubled the amount, and this impacted the others on their table, and they went out and they did the same. And so the conclusion, one individual with kindness and compassion is able to impact 125 others. Wow. definitely hope for the future. So if after hearing all of these things today, you decide little act of kindness, a little act of compassion, of truth, that action, and you won't know the impact that you have on people, but that action can impact at least 125 others. So there you go. You have the formula for creating a better world through changing your consciousness.
And it begins with that thought to do that, which I guess brings us on to really understanding the power of the mind, and that actually we hold this power within ourselves to do this.
Well, we all know, you know, if there's a powerful thought that you have, a dozen people might tell you, no, it's impossible. Many people might say to you, why are you bothering? But if you've got that one powerful thought and you move with it, all the other resistance falls away and that thought takes practical shape. And so the power of the mind is incredible. Whatever it is I choose to do, I can do it. And if I understand what love is, I've experienced God's love, I want to share God's love, I understand that the power of peace is what the world needs today, that's what I'm going to share.
Which leads us very nicely into our shared meditation experience. And just to repeat, in case you didn't quite catch it at the beginning, that this is a day, which is the third Sunday of every month, when the Brahma Kumaris centers right throughout the world have an hour in which they really sit and visualize a world in peace, a world in harmony, and this is what we're going to experience together now. Do you want to just say a few words, Sister Gently, to conclude and lead us into our meditation on how we should really approach this with the belief that our thoughts can travel out there and connect up with thoughts of people right around the world, and that is actually doing something?
They say that the power of prayer works more effectively than anything else, whether it's for healing individuals, people we love, whether it's for healing traumatic situations and bringing peace to that. So again, amazing things are happening in the world to bring light into the world again. There's research that's indicating all of this. So what we're going to do is to just sit quietly, peacefully, just as you've been doing, but find a way in which the body can be balanced and still, so that it's not a distraction for the mind. And we're going to explore going on a journey inwards and what's going on related to the soul, connecting with God. And God's light, of course, can reach across the planet and the whole of the human family. And so we're sharing God's light for peace in the world. And we have two very experienced meditators who are going to guide us in that way. So I'm going to hand over to Rachel.
Thank you, Sister Gently. Thank you, Philippa. I will speak out a few words, and then we'll have a little some silence when we can practice meditation in silence, and then Philippa will also speak out some words. While we are speaking, I encourage you to go into the feelings that these words bring. So not just nice ideas, but experiment and explore what feelings these words create in you. And while we're speaking, Sister Gently will share spiritual vision. We call it drishti. So with each one, not seeing the body, not seeing into your mind, just spirit connecting with spirit, soul connecting with soul. So we're encouraging you to look at Sister Gently's forehead, like that point of light in the middle of the forehead, or if you prefer, perhaps you could just focus your eyes on the point behind. So let's just start again by relaxing the body and allowing every single part of the body
to come into a beautiful state of stillness and calm. Just for a little while, I'm not going to be influenced by the demands of the body or the interests of the body. I'm just going to step back from the awareness of the body that I, the spirit, inhabit. And I'm going to focus instead on that I inside the body. And so I imagine this tiny point of bright light in the middle of my forehead. I can't see it except with my mind's eye. But this point of light, this spark of life energy, is who I really am. And this spark of light is naturally peaceful, calm, serene. Is naturally loving and compassionate and generous-hearted. And this is who I really am. And if I sometimes don't feel that way, it's because I've lost sight of who I really am. I've allowed myself to fix my attention and my focus on external things and to neglect the truth and the beauty of the inner self. And so in meditation, I'm giving time to explore and experience the goodness inside myself, the beauty, the truth of who I really am, separate from this body, this personality. The soul. Being of peace and love and joy. A being of wisdom. The being of purity. Start to connect with a very different self and to feel very differently about myself when I'm once again aware of my own inner truth. And when I'm in this awareness of who I really am and the qualities that are naturally and eternally mine, it's then that I can resonate with the truth and the qualities of the divine, the one who is always 100% peaceful, wise, loving, blissful. for the soul, understanding and experiencing its own truth, is then able to connect with the divine, with the truth, the eternal truth, in a very natural and very loving way. The child with the parent, and in this beautiful reunion, this beautiful connection, I feel the waves of love, the waves of peace, filling the soul, uplifting the soul, re-energizing the soul. So my mind feels contented. In this loving and beautiful connection, the mind is still. I don't need anything. I don't want anything. I don't have to think specifically about anything. I am. I, the soul, am peace, connected with the divine, with the Supreme Soul, the soul becomes its true self. And in this experience of the self and of the divine, automatically we radiate vibrations of peace and love and hope into the world. And so let us now keep our minds focused, keep connected with the soul, with our inner qualities, and stay in that loving relationship with the perfect one. And for the next little while, just carry on spreading thoughts, spreading vibrations of peace into this city, into this country, and right out into the whole wide world. Om.
I feel myself basking in the beauty of this experience. This is the experience of being my true self. This is the experience of my expanded self. I feel the qualities of this original state of being. State in which all the words slip away, fall away, and I'm simply left with the experience of being. This state of being is one of profound peace. This is my true nature. This is who I am. I am this peaceful being. Feel the sense of connection. To a sense of joy. Of unlimited happiness. Of complete purity. And I feel the pull of this exquisite love. In this state of being, I feel myself being pulled to the source of love. To the being who is constantly the embodiment of love. Feel this current of love surround me now. And I realize that this love has always been there. Holding me. Surrounding me with the highest thoughts, a at my beauty. And my quality of simply being. This experience feels eternal. It feels as if this will never come to an end. And in this state of being, I feel myself becoming a radiant light. A light that shines out and out into the world. And as I look at the world, I realize the interconnection between all souls of humanity. And I notice lights right around the world beginning to sparkle with this same beautiful, blissful state of peace. And as I look, I see these lights shining brighter and brighter. And as they do, they begin to connect with each other and form a network of shining light around the world. I see how this power of love is stronger than any other force. The lights continue to shine until the whole earth is bathed in beautiful light. And I feel my heart filling with the joy of this experience. And slowly, thoughts return to the place. place in which we are all being in this room. In this body. I notice the softness in my body. I notice how this experience of peace now permeates every cell in my being. And I know that I can connect with this eternal part of myself whenever I choose. I am that. I am peace. Om Shanti.
Thank you to all of you for joining in this worldwide initiative and contributing your peaceful and loving thoughts to the world. And a special thank you to Sister Jenti and to Philippa for sharing thoughts that I think we'll all take home with us and work on more, but also thoughts that will generally practically help us in our lives to achieve that calm and that readiness to be there to serve the world that we are all searching for. So I think now I'm going to ask Brother Paramjit to come and make some announcements.
So on behalf of all of you, my sweet brothers and sisters, I'd like to thank Sister Jenti, Sister Rachel and Sister Philippa for their presence on stage and sharing their thoughts about stillness of the mind. Now they're going to take leave because they have to go in the early hours of the morning to Zurich, so we wish them a farewell and safe journey.